Hello, and welcome to the Astro City Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be discussing Kurt Busiek's Astro City series. In this Astro City Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Astro City number 22, which finishes out the 1996 volume. We're then going to jump to the six-page Astro City Since the Fire story from the 9/11 The World's Finest Comic Book Writers and Artists Tell Stories to Remember number 2. That's a long title, geez. And then we're going to do the first three issues of Astro City Local Heroes. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, this was an interesting time for Astro City because these issues were going to cover a range of 3 years.
3 years? Holy mackerel.
Because the first one, Astro City 22, that finishes out that volume was August 2000.
Okay.
The short story from the 9/11, one of the many 9/11 specials, came out in April 2002. Of course, 9/11 happened. It took a little while to get stuff organized, yada yada. And then Local Heroes started up in April of 2003 and kind of went bi-monthly almost.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. That kind of makes sense. And that might be why they feel so different, you know, going from one story to the other. The end of that 1996 series over to Local Heroes, it feels very different.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. The crazy thing is, after issue 22, before Local Heroes number 1, so going from August 2000 to April 2003, there were just those 6 pages.
That's crazy.
Yeah, in April 2002 to get by with. It's nuts.
Yeah, and we haven't had any Astro City since, well, it's been years. I don't know when the last Astro City we got was.
Well, the last thing we got was that this is then... special, or that was then special, from March 2022. So it's been 2 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, I'm not counting the Metro books because those are just reprints, you know. But it's very slow, the things coming out. And then they even solicited that big hardcover book. We got it in the magazine.
Oh, the Opus or whatever.
You never were able to order it. So I don't know if they changed their mind or what. It's just weird.
Yeah, it was in what? It was in previews, but not in the image catalog and not in the order form.
Exactly. And it's never appeared in the order form. It's just bizarre.
If anyone keeps an eye on the FOC stuff and it shows up there, please let us know.
Yeah. We don't want to miss it.
Yeah. So yeah, it was, like I said, interesting time for Astro City. What do you say we dive into issue 22 that rounds out that second volume? Because there was the 6-issue one in 95, of course.
Yeah, this was an interesting issue, I thought. It was just very different than a lot of the stuff we've read. Not in a bad way, just different, you know?
Yeah, the lead character is Mitch Goodman, who plays the Crimson Cougar on Tomorrow's Dawn, which is a late-night superhero soap opera.
Yeah.
And the implication is it's... produced, it does okay, but it's not like people are just going after it gangbusters, because, I mean, there are real heroes in there. Who wants to watch fake ones on TV? Which is kind of funny, because the long and the short of this story is Mitch ends up, along with his friends, stopping a robbery of one of the Astro Marts. It's caught on camera, it becomes a big deal, and it kind of takes him from being a... somewhere between a stuntman and an actor. I think he's getting out of the stuntman into the acting type stuff. So low-level actor, and it catapults his career a bit. And all the machinations of, is that good, is that bad, and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. And you see stuff like this in real life. You know, something that'll come out in an actor or whatever's personal life. And it can be there to their detriment, or like this story's going, catapulting them into the spotlight.
Which I would argue was to his detriment. But I know what you mean.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, so we see stuff like this, and so it's kind of cool because you could see this really playing out and really happening, and I thought it was cool that he was kind of like a stuntman, so he did have some physical skills, which helped him taking down the criminals.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the other thing that's interesting, and they kind of downplay it, is Martha Sullivan is his kind of support partner in the special effects area. and she's apparently a low-level telekinetic. Had enough powers that it's like she wanted to go hero stuff, but not enough to really be able to pull that off. And it's interesting because I'm pretty sure we see her in a later issue.
Oh, really? Okay, interesting. I wouldn't have expected that from what we saw here.
I don't think she was necessarily the big star of that later issue, but we see somebody else with low-level telekinetic stuff in the Hollywood thing, so it's got to be her.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Very cool.
So it's interesting kind of how quickly his career goes from low-level actor on a nighttime soap to he's got a movie deal, he's got all this stuff coming, and his friends are, is this really what you want?
They know the guy, and apparently he doesn't like to be really in the limelight and have expectations on him, because if you're thrust into the spotlight, everyone's looking at you. And everyone has expectations of you more so than when he was just doing his bit acting and a few stunts here and there.
Well, one of the great lines that his fellow actor who's playing the mobster in that opening scene said was, you don't go through a door because it's open. You do it because that's how you get where you're going.
That's the goal for you. And is that really your goal? Is that what you want?
Well, and it's just a few pages later that, you know, Mitch is, oh, they're just jealous and stuff. And then he's thinking, well, it's like, okay, he got into the rodeo to get out of ranching.
Yep.
He got into stunts to get out of rodeo.
Yep.
He's getting into acting to get out of stunts.
Yep.
And he thinks this is kind of that next step for him.
Yep.
But it's as much about leaving something as going, more about leaving something than going somewhere.
Yeah, very true. And then I loved how the story, how it kind of twists, because we've always talked about this. I mean, we've talked about it in the past, and I know you've talked about this with other people before. Do the super criminals exist because of superheroes, or do superheroes exist because of super criminals? And literally in this comic, as soon as this guy starts making the spotlight, he's a hero, the criminals come knocking. They're looking for him just to kind of test him out, see what he's got.
Well, they're literally waiting in his apartment when he gets home one night.
Exactly. I was like, that is where it takes a turn for the worse. Now, for his career, he thought he was doing the right thing, but now people have your number and they're coming. Boom.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting the way you phrase that of, do the supervillain exist because of the superheroes and stuff like that? At the dawn of comics and stuff like that, I think that was kind of not the immediate question, but it got to where that was the question.
Yeah.
I think because of the way our culture has evolved, that we're now at the point where I think the question is, would superheroes exist because supervillains existed?
Yeah.
In other words, the default setting if somebody gets powers is they're going to go knock over a bank or do something bad or whatever. So it would be those outliers who do the right thing, not because it's the right thing, but because they have to.
Yeah, it's a reaction to almost where society is right now, it feels like. You give some people some power in today's society where you see the way people act and the way they behave and the way, if nobody's looking, what they really would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think most people make the best choices. They're not super heroic. So like you said, there are certain people who may take it upon themselves to step up and be like, we got to do something about this. It's out of control. Kind of like in society where you see the people running out of the stores, you know, grabbing goods and taking off. You see the videos all over the place.
Yeah, the looting that happens the minute something goes, power's out and the looting starts or something.
Yeah. And every now and then you see someone almost kind of put themselves in the path of danger trying to stop it. That's the guy who's picking to be the superhero.
Well, I think how superpowers would play out in the quote-unquote real world would really depend what decade they came into being.
True. I agree.
Because I think back, and this is, you know, rose-colored glasses looking at the past, all that kind of, the good old days sort of syndrome.
Yeah.
If it were the Depression, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, how those powers would get used would reflect the era.
Very much so.
And I think if they were introduced today, they would reflect the era, and I don't think that's a good thing.
I don't either. Like, I used to think about the grabbing things from the store. That's low level.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, but you could see people kind of raging against the machine, you know, the elites and the, oh, you have too much money, you know, almost the Robin Hood syndrome. Are they really the good guy, or are they just abusing people because they think they have money? And that could take a dangerous turn.
Well, the opportunist looters or whatever, if they got super speed, I mean, suddenly that takes on a whole different thing. If they could do that whenever, because nobody would even notice they did it.
Yep.
But then you get the people with the agenda, whatever it may be, and stuff. So
yeah, it's really cool to see how it could change from the 50s to the 2020s where we are.
Well, and I think that's part of why it's hard for a new superhero universe to catch on, is they're having to kind of create the instigating event of powers and stuff in the modern era. And things like secret identities and stuff made sense back in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, even the 80s, when it's not like everybody had a camera on them all the time.
Yep. Now in the era of Instagram and TikTok and everything else, and everyone has a computer and a camera in their pocket, it's very different.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. So again, Mitch comes home having played the Crimson Cougar, gotten famous, and there is, what is this? This is Demolition and the Unholy Alliance.
The best names ever for these bad guys. Made up of, I wrote down the names because they were awesome. Glowworm, Slamburger, Spice, Flamethrower. I was like, oh my God, Slamburger. I'm like, what kind of name is this? Anyways.
Well, if you're going to do the big brick type or whatever, it's probably fairly accurate.
Yeah, he does look like a Slamburger.
What got me with Flamethrower is he's sitting there dripping, I don't know, flaming napalm or whatever on the guy's rug.
Yeah!
I mean, that place is going to burn down whether they attack him or not.
And this guy's just a stuntman wearing a suit, and they are taking him to task.
Yeah, and it's not even a padded suit. It's fake armor.
Yeah.
Because he was complaining, I think, when he took down the villain at the Astro Mart, that the thing was falling apart on him as he did it. And they had the hero props for when they do the close-ups or something. And then I guess it's Slamburger who just charges him and knocks him out the window. And tackles him out the window, I guess would be the way to say that.
Yeah, which was kind of cool because I was thinking, this guy's going to get a very bad ending. But literally, the flip side of that is Honor Guard's kind of scoping out this new superhero too to see if he's legit and, you know, see if what's his real deal, you know? And they're literally standing outside his window. And save his life.
I couldn't tell if they were checking him out or if they had been going after the Unholy Alliance.
That's probably more likely. I assume they were checking him out, you know, like going in to scope him out. But that's probably more likely that they saw these guys going into the apartment. Yeah, I like your version.
Either way, they were there to catch Mitch before he went splat.
Yeah, which would have been a very quick ending to the story.
But as you can imagine, when somebody goes crashing out high-rise apartment, and then the Honor Guard shows up, the media gets there in fairly short order.
Yeah.
And Mitch does help out. He picks up a 2x4 and whacks, I guess it's Flamethrower on the back of the head and stuff. Media shows up and says, oh, are you joining the Honor Guard? And he's like, oh, crap, this is going to knock it up another level.
Yeah, because the Honor Guard knows to take off. They can fly away. And he's left there literally standing with a 2x4. Just like, oh, God. Samaritan gives him a look like, are you really going to stay there for the interview?
Well, I think they were still wrapping up when the media was surrounding Mitch. And he does the, no, it wasn't me. And of course, that gets spun into the, oh, isn't he modest?
Yeah. At that point, they're looking for a hero. They're making a story. The media is, it's the news of the day. Here's a new guy. Here's a new hero for Astro City. And they are spinning this to make him more than what he is, even though he's trying to shut it down.
Well, and I think that's why superhero stories play out differently over the decades, is because media is so different over those decades.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
We're not in the Walter Cronkite and that's the way it was era. We're in the post-truth, this is what I say it is era.
Exactly. It's so different today than it used to be. I miss the Cronkite days.
Yeah.
I really do.
Well, back when you could trust the nightly news.
Exactly, and not wonder, huh, what's the angle from this station versus this station? What's the angle here? Which is something you start questioning today.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It was funny because his out.
His out was really well done.
It was really well done. I loved it. Because you see a big bad break in while he's filming the movie, I guess, that he's doing right now.
Well, it's not the movie. I think he's still on the network show and they're doing another one of those outside things for the action. To kind of stitch together the scenes for the soap opera.
Yeah.
And in comes, what is it, Dark Centurion.
Yeah, and beats the tar out of him.
Oh, yeah. To the point where he's like, hey, I'll give you what you want, money, anything, just don't kill me.
Please, please. Yeah, begging.
Of course, there's a crowd there, and it's funny because at first it looks like it's a nighttime shoot, but by the end it's looking like it's broad daylight. Either way, there's a bunch of people watching. It's like, oh, this guy's a loser. He's a coward.
Yep.
Which, of course, was the entire point of the exercise.
Yep. He was paying this guy.
Well, he wasn't paying him. It was the guy he worked with the whole time, Eric.
Exactly.
He and Sully did it as a favor. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. I figure you gave him a kickback, but but yeah, his buddy beat the heck out of him just to stop the nonsense and the spin and stop him from facing almost death when he gets to his apartment, because he's on a list at this point, and that's terrifying when you don't have superpowers.
Yeah, well, and there was a line that the Unholy Alliance used, that they were looking for a fight, they told Mitch to suit up, and that they represent people who want to discourage people like Mitch, because who they represent think there are enough masks out there, and they don't want any more volunteers. So they were there to send a message, and Mitch was easy pickings.
Yep.
And his buddies helped get him out of that limelight and very much saved his life, I think.
Yeah. I thought this was a good story, and it was different than anything we read. It's literally about people, you know, like when you're young, hey, I'd love to be a superhero. When you're an adult, I don't want to be a superhero. That's not really my ambition. That's not my goal, because this is showing the reality of it. There's repercussions.
Yeah, there's definitely a cost to it.
Yeah, and that's just something you don't see in modern comics. Very cool, and I liked it.
Yeah, it was a fun story. Now, let's go jump to that 6-page Sense the Fire short story.
Yeah, that was really quick.
Yeah, it's almost literally a blink and you miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And the crux of the story is a kid comes to a fire station because he wants to talk to a guy he knows comes by there every Saturday. Turns out that guy was a firefighter, has lost a leg, and just shows up there because I guess that was the station he used to work at or something.
Correct.
And that was the firefighter who saved this kid.
Yeah, and lost his leg in the act of saving the kid.
Or that night, at least. I don't think it was...
That night, yeah.
Because he said he saved like 3 people that night. I guess the kid could have been the 3rd, either way.
Yeah.
The superheroic aspect was, I guess it's Samaritan fighting, what was it, King Missile, as they like plow through the apartment building.
Exactly.
And the kid's floor suddenly isn't there anymore. What's interesting is he does have a poster of Crimson Cougar in the background. I hadn't noticed that till now.
Yeah, I did notice that. That's kind of cool.
So the kid's like, thanks, and do you have any regrets? And Arnie, the firefighter, is like, well, I obviously regret losing the leg. You know, wish that hadn't happened, but do I regret being a firefighter doing that stuff? And he's like, no, if I had to do it again, absolutely do the same thing. And the kid's a little flummoxed by that of like, well, why? And Arnie's like, well, look at all these people. I mean, sooner or later, somebody's going to need help. You want somebody who's trained, skilled, and equipped to help you.
Yeah.
And if you're in a jam like that, you want to hear that siren coming to help.
Yep.
And he's like, hey, I saved 47 people in the last 8 months, 3 that night, and that the leg was nothing to pay for it. But that's literally how he phrases it. It was a price he was willing to pay, given the impact he was able to have. And the last page is just the boy kind of absorbing that as they drop him at the cemetery where the guys who had saved the firefighter apparently were laid to rest. Because there was an explosion. It was a little unclear exactly what happened, but definitely it was a story showing that being a firefighter, not an easy life. Definitely some costs to it and stuff.
Yeah, I have a brother-in-law who's a fire chief. He's been a firefighter his whole life. And I work out at my CrossFit gym with firefighters, and it's true. I work out with police officers too. But I mean, yeah, it's tough because they choose to do that. They wanted to do that. They like to do it. I mean, what kid didn't want to be a firefighter when you're growing up, but not all of us did it. And because of that, they put their lives on the line to help you and I when we dial 911. And so a lot of respect, because even, you know, our soldiers, they do defend us and fight for our freedom. You know, we have the local heroes, you know, the firefighters and the cops who are there. And literally, I love that, you know, when they turn the sirens on them. And a lot of times police officers, once again, modern society with everyone with a camera, I guess there are bad apples, but there's so much disrespect when you see those videos too. And that's something about our society that's changed, which is just a little bit sad.
Yeah.
They're not looked up to, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think what's unique about the firefighters.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned soldiers, police officers. I would put emergency medical people in the same kind of a thing or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Soldiers can be used offensively.
Exactly. Very
you're
true.
You're not always happy when a cop shows up, depending on how fast you're driving or something like that. And, you know, obviously, if you need an ambulance or an EMT or whatever, you're very thankful they come and stuff. But the firefighters, not only are they kind of, quote-unquote, playing defense or whatever on our side, but they are loaded up with, I don't know how many pounds of gear or whatever, as they rush into a burning building.
Yeah.
That takes, I think, a special type of crazy in a good way to not only do that, but to spend the time working out to where you're physically capable of doing that on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. And you're always happy when the firefighters show up, because it's always for a reason.
Well, if your house is burning down, you may not be happy about that. But knowing some people who were in a house that burned down and they were able to get out and stuff, yeah, you definitely want the fire guys there.
Yeah. So a lot of respect for them. And I thought it was a cool story, even though it was very, very short.
It was short. It was to the point. It served the goal as, you know, because again, this was part of that 9/11, the world's finest comic book writers and artists tell stories to remember number 2. Of course, there was a number 1. I don't remember how many pages these things were, and they were just one of the many things that came out around that time in response to 9/11 and all the firefighters and other people who risked their lives or lost their lives, you know, saving others and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But overall, good story.
Yeah, good to the point. I don't know if we ever see this kid again or not, but it would be interesting to see if he later became a firefighter or what happened to him.
Yeah, that would be nice to see if that ever happens. We'll see.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Astro City Local Heroes number 1. This is a 5-issue miniseries. We got different stories every issue. And this first one of newcomers is around Pete, who's a doorman at a hotel, the classic.
Yeah, seeing people come and go.
It was interesting because this kind of falls into what I would call kind of that slice of life storyline kind of a deal.
Yes.
It's an eventful day in Astro City, but I don't know if it was unusually so.
Yeah, I agree with that. It seems like for them, it's almost, I hate to say it, but run of the mill. And it's more his reactions to the people seeing the run of the mill in the Astro City day in the life of.
Yeah, and it was pretty clear the point of the story, so to speak, is that some people aren't cut out for Astro City.
Yeah.
Not even to visit it.
Correct. It'd be like you and I, if the superheroes were real and you and I decided to go to New York because that's where the Fantastic Four, you know, the Avengers, we'll say Batman is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to see that type of stuff. Spider-Man, you know, swinging from. It doesn't always play out the way you think it would. It's not all, it's smoke and mirrors and rose-colored glasses and fun. There's a lot of stuff that can go wrong and you could be put in a lot of danger.
Well, yeah, if you somehow woke up one day in the DC universe, would you go to Gotham City or Metropolis and why?
Yeah.
And I don't know that I'd set foot anywhere near Gotham City.
Yeah, that doesn't look like a place I'd want to go.
Not saying that Metropolis is safe either, but Astro City, I mean, all sorts of stuff happens.
Yeah, you got a guy floating around with a noose around his neck. So, yeah, it's definitely weird.
And then the doorman's talking about this girl who he sees going to school every day. Looks like she's got a new boyfriend, all this stuff. And at first I'm like, is this an estranged daughter? What is this? And we get a nice kind of answer to that by the end of the story.
Yes, we do.
But we also have to set up a family who's in to experience Astro City and the heroes. This lady who's got urgent business with the Samaritan because she's important. And then another guy who's heading off to this other hotel that's not in the safest part of town.
Exactly.
If somebody were to tell me it's not a safe part of town and you're talking like an Astro City sort of place, I would listen. But I also think we find out why this guy didn't listen and why he was going to that part of town.
Exactly. That was a nice little flashback, a look back at what happened and why.
Yeah. I'm a little unclear if this guy was going to this Gleason Hotel. Why was he staying at the Classic?
Yeah, that is kind of weird now that you mention it. I wasn't thinking about it then, but that is weird.
And maybe he's dumb, not stupid. You know what I mean?
That's true. He's dumb. I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid. You know, what is the thing? Oh, I was born at night, but not last night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we wind up getting a flashback as to how Pete moved to Astro City.
Yeah.
The allure of it. He had a run in with, couldn't tell quite what they were, shape-shifting things or whatever. But I mean, these were like were-cats or whatever, maybe.
Yeah, they look like cat people. So that's what I didn't know. They're kind of like vampires, but they look like cats.
Yeah, well, and they get scared off by the Confessor, the original.
Yep.
And he's like, you know, maybe Astro City's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we then, you know, we cut back between kind of the then and the now, and we find all this crazy stuff going on in the now, because we've got to put these other people we've just met into jeopardy. so we can see what happens. And one of them almost, you know, falls off, or their car drives off a bridge almost, and some stuff like that. I love how the family went to the, what was it, the Sprang Museum of Popular Advertising.
Yeah, that was kind of funny, yeah.
Dick Sprang was an artist, and this was back when, you know, Batman would be chasing the Joker across this giant typewriter and stuff. So this thing has, you know, a giant typewriter, giant telephone, and stuff like that. And it kind of allowed for the visuals we had seen in some of the Golden Age comics to actually work in a modern sense. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool. The family got to see Cracker Jack jumping around.
Yeah, and Quarrel. Don't
and Quarrel, yeah. Quarrel, yep.
But I couldn't tell quite where they were standing such that everything fell apart around them, and they're just like on this pedestal thing almost up there.
Almost too convenient. It's like how did they notice that? That's insane.
Yeah, yeah. This is the sort of thing you can get away with some stuff in comics that would be a little trickier to do possibly in either a live action or an animated thing where you've got motion and stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
Because you'd have to really sell, this is how the walkway they were on got demolished, stuff that not even the rails or whatever are around anymore.
But they're literally on this, almost like a beam, like an I-beam holding it up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like how in Monument Valley, you've got all those rocks just sticking up crazy high and whatnot. And if you're at the top of them, getting down isn't going to be easy.
Oh, it will not.
Yeah. So we get so many little cameos because we get the Unholy Alliance again. We get various people from the Honor Guard. We get Cracker Jack. And I'll be honest, it was just kind of a little tough to keep track of what was going on, where, and when. But like Jack in the Box saves the guy who's heading to that wrong part of town because he was in there meeting with, I think, the Unholy Alliance as a representative from the organized crime family, because there's conveniently some radio broadcasts we're able to listen in on to get some context on some stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's like, that's why he was going to the bad part of town. He was a bad guy.
Yeah, he wasn't necessarily a good guy.
But we get towards the end of the day, and the important lady who's gonna have business with Samaritan, it's like, she's getting the hell out of town, and she's not happy about it. The other guy who had the meeting with the Unholy Alliance, he's not coming back either. He's a little worse for wear. And then the family comes in, and they're shaking a bit. But the kids are happy, the parents are a little less so, but it's like, okay, it was an adventure.
Yeah, he's like, we might just do that after being left in that beam.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's a brave father. Okay, cool.
Well, and then we get a flashback to 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And find out why Pete stuck in town.
Yes.
It was another incident in Astro City, this time involving, I don't know, giant statue things. The destructoids.
Yeah, they were really weird, those things.
Yeah, they looked like, I don't know, Aztec statues come to life at the scale of, I don't know, 100 feet or something.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. That's perfect.
And Honor Guard of the Day shows up to help out or whatever, but giant things are fighting, things are going to fall, and there was a kid in danger. It didn't look like any of the Honor Guard could get there, so Pete rushed over to help out. He had been a pro athlete, but he banged up his knee and stuff, and it caused him problems, but he was able to save the girl.
Yeah, his knee even gives out in the attempt, but he still saves her. And that is the buildup.
And gets the young girl to the mother and stuff, gets back to work and stuff like that. Apparently that part of the story was minor enough, it didn't make the papers. He doesn't know the name of the girl or whatever, but that's the girl he sees walking back and forth to school every day.
Yep. And so he kind of smiles when he sees her to himself inside, because he's responsible for that life.
He's invested.
He is.
You know, she doesn't know him. He doesn't need to talk to her or whatever. But I definitely got the sense if something bad were to happen to her within his, you know, purview or whatever, he'd put a stop to it as best he could.
Yeah. I thought that was a really nice story for giving the viewpoint of a guy who's just working in Astro City, why he's invested and why he stayed. And just telling about people that come and go into the city and their experiences.
Yeah, he's a doorman at a hotel and stuff, but I love the last caption we get from him of, I wear a uniform too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that.
Kind
yeah.
of, he's got his role to play in the city and he's good with it.
Which was really cool.
Yeah. What did you think of this next story?
The next story was about the mom talking to her daughter. This one was probably the one I think I liked the least.
I'm right there with you. I know exactly what they were riffing on.
Yeah.
It took them a little bit to get there because we start with a bunch of Easter eggs with Beauty, and we even see Leo and stuff.
Yeah.
In kind of Irene's collection of memorabilia and whatnot.
Yeah.
She's talking to her daughter. And at first I thought we were going to get a flashback on Irene's mother, Samantha's grandmother and stuff. But no, we get Irene's backstory.
Yep.
And she's essentially kind of sort of a Lois Lane type.
Yep. Completely.
She is no nonsense. She will kind of push and finagle her way to get what she wants and stuff. And she winds up encountering, what did they call him? Atomicus.
Atomicus, yes. That guy with a kind of glowing head, which was weird.
Well, when we got the splash page of his origin and such, I'm immediately thinking this is a Captain Atom sort of origin.
That's exactly what I thought, too.
I guess Firestorm would be another possibility.
Yeah.
But he's got atomic powers of some ilk, you know, flight and all that kind of stuff. She winds up getting rescued by him, hitting it off, getting to know him. And part of it is, he's like, I am here to help humanity, but I don't really understand humanity.
Yeah.
And while this scene has parallels to the classic, you know, Lois interviewing Superman for the first time or whatnot, she clearly misinterprets various events.
Yes.
And it goes, I was going to say goes downhill from there, I think, from my perspective.
Yeah, I would say, okay, this is a weird thing, but like, if you're overly friendly all the time, sometimes people, like, ladies will think if a guy's overly friendly that they're flirting, even if you're not, if that's just how your personality is. And that this guy, he's just being very nice and very friendly, and she's taking it to a different place than he is, that he's into me and she's pushing the issue.
Well, there's a comment a couple of times as she's narrating the story to her daughter of, there was this glint in his eye.
Yeah.
And I thought it meant thus and so. And I mean, at this point, it basically goes to the, she feels she's been challenged by this guy to prove you are my equal or whatnot, that you're clever enough or what have you. So she literally goes all Lois Lane on him, trying to figure out his identity. And she thinks it's one of her coworkers.
Yeah, literally drawing the mob to the guy's house because she's stalking him. And the mob's like, let's take this guy out before, you know, he comes after us. Boom.
Yeah.
Which is just insane.
We get a few other things of the classic-ish, almost I Love Lucy level plot lines that we'd gotten, not only with Lois Lane, but also with Lana Lang and Superboy.
Yeah.
Of, oh, I'll do this and trick him to reveal his identity or whatnot. And it was kind of a disturbing story in places.
It really was. When she pulled out the glove, that was disturbing.
Yeah, she damn near killed some people, but knocked them out or whatever, not realizing what the problem was. And then when she has one where she winds up seeing this Adam Peterson that she thinks is Atomicus, and they're rescued by Atomicus, she's like, well, crap, it can't be him, you know? So there's that.
Yeah.
It can't be, but it must be. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So she is totally, almost messed up this guy's life because of her suspicions.
Her obsession.
Obsession. That's a good way of saying it.
Because when she sees him using atomic duplicates, and she's like, oh, that's how he tricked me the one time.
Yep.
She goes all psycho on him.
Literally.
Rips open his shirt, sees the costume, and this is in the middle of their workplace, so outing him in public and stuff like that. And he doesn't take it all that well.
No. And this part gave me the almost like a parallel to Shazam, how we see him.
Yes. Definitely a Shazam aspect.
Because this whole thing where she's obsessing over this guy and going to figure out who it is, and he's just trying to be a nice guy and learn how to be a person. And he's like, I'm only a few days old, or however old he was. I can't remember what he said.
At this point, a few years or whatever, because he was essentially born in that accident. A
few years old, yeah. And he can't help that he looks like a man, and she's treating him like a 40-year-old guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not. This is a child. And mentally a child. And so it's so weird because she's obsessed over him. She's done weird stuff to him. And she's basically, it's felt like child abuse at this point.
Oh, and he goes flying off, presumably into space, never to be seen again. She gets fired. She starts drinking, she just goes rock bottom.
Yeah, she's a horrible person, honestly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then she winds up working for this other politician. That's Samantha's father and all this sort of a deal. And this story didn't land the ending for me, either with Irene or then when Samantha, you know, heads out and turns out to be this flying fox that we hear about, you know, at the beginning of the story and stuff. And I'm like, why? Huh?
Yeah. And that whole bit where she did, where she's like looking at the picture. Oh, and, you know, what, this was my real love and he knew it, just made me feel almost contempt for her at this point. I'm just like, I don't like her at all. I don't want to see this lady again.
Yeah, she did not come across the least bit likable.
Nope.
And while it was a okay twist on the, you know, Golden Silver Age stories of the Lois or Lana trying to unmask Clark as Superman, it was not the least bit of a flattering portrayal of that Lois Lana kind of a character at all.
Yeah.
There was no redeeming quality, or I was doing it. I mean, she thought she was doing it because she loved him, whatever, but even the way she met him, she was angling to get more out of life than she had been given.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we both hated that one. The person, I should say.
The person. I was going to say, the story was very effective, and that's the problem.
Yeah, the story was effective that made you really loathe the person who was being portrayed.
I didn't get the epilogue, though, tag scene or whatever there with the flying fox at the end, and why that was there other than get to fill out another page or two.
Yeah, that didn't make much sense. It really didn't add anything to it.
I don't know if we wound up seeing the flying fox later or not.
It could be. Maybe in the next few episodes or issues.
I'm okay if we don't.
I'm okay, too.
All right. The last one we're going to talk about tonight is the third issue of Astro City Local Heroes. This is a story called Pastoral. And the focal character here is Camilla. She is being exiled from Astro City by her parents because I guess her mom's doing lectures in France and dad's going along with her, and that's going to be for the whole summer. So she's getting shipped off to the aunt and uncle and cousins out in Kaplanville, a farm in Kaplanville, out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, Kaplanville. And I was like, this has to have some kind of comic thing. And I literally searched for Kaplan Comics, and there was some cartoonist named Elliot Kaplan.
Mm.
But he was from way, way back, like the 40s or 30s. I was like, holy mackerel, maybe that's why. I don't know.
I'll be honest, there are a ton of references like Kaplanville that it's like, yep, don't know it, and I'm not going to go look it up.
Yeah, I wasted time.
Did you check that Herocopia site?
I did. Not for that, though. I've checked it in the past. So, no. Not this time.
I did wind up checking it for this issue.
They have tons of stuff in there in Herocopia.
Yeah. What I found entertaining about this story and a little weird is all of this is from Cammy's point of view. She is constantly emailing somebody.
Yep.
I don't think we ever get a name for that somebody. We never get a reply from that somebody. So, kind of weird.
Yeah, that I was waiting for the reply and it never came.
And, I mean, we get to know her aunt, uncle, and cousins and stuff pretty well. I thought they were a fun group.
Yep.
And we're definitely, just as last issue was the whole Lois and Lana, you know, unmasking Clark or whatever, to me, this was Smallville.
That's exactly what I was going to say. This had that total Smallville feel in every way, and in all the right ways and good ways, I would say.
Absolutely. Small town, tight-knit community, everybody knows everybody, which is, you know, good and bad in some respects. Certainly was creeping Cammy out a little bit at times.
Yeah, with that old man in the truck, he like leans out and just says something. Tell your parents this. And she's like, isn't that creepy? They're like, no, that's just the neighbor. He just wants to relay a message. But that's a small town versus the city.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it turns out that they've got their crimes too. I mean, there was a shootout at the Kaplanville National Bank.
Yep.
And that's kind of freaking Cammy out and stuff because, I mean, guys shooting guns. Everybody else is like, yeah, been a while since bank's been robbed. And then in comes a whoosh. And then there is the, what is it? The roustabout.
The roustabout. Yeah. A roust for short.
Yeah. And he's country western kind of a superhero, I guess would be the way to put it.
Yeah. He's almost like country western Superman.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. He's got the right powers. The presumably super speed, maybe. Flight, absolutely. Super strength, might be bulletproof.
Yep.
I'm assuming so, because, yeah, a couple of the bullets bounce off him and stuff, so.
The Superman analog for Smallville.
Superboy, but yes.
Superboy, yeah.
Yeah, so at this point, it was very clear they're going a different route, but it's like, okay, let's see Smallville from the lens of somebody from Astro City.
And what I did like about that is Cammy had been going on and on about, oh, you can see all the heroes in the city, in the city, in the city. And then she was kind of thrown, taken off when she's like, oh, they have their own hero here. Well, they only got one, you know?
Well, and anytime Holly, the younger cousin's like, well, Rostabouts, and she's about to say something, Lynn, the older cousin's like, Holly, you know, and just cuts her off and stuff. So it's clear the locals know about this guy.
Yeah.
And not just he comes and saves the day once in a while, but they know him.
Exactly.
Can't be that kind of a small town hero and not be known. Now, I did find it interesting that, granted, internet connections are limited for her in this small town because they've just got the one phone line and she's on dial-up, but she does go to herocopia.com to look up Roustabout. I went ahead and did that too, and it's the same page.
Oh, okay, so it's identical. I didn't look it up, but I just assumed it was.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was kind of fun and stuff. And they've got the carnival in town because it's a small town. That's going to be a big deal and whatnot. And she sees Rick.
Rick, the overall guy.
Yeah, well, there's a few in overalls. But yeah. Some guy knocks over one of the steel beams that's going to support one of the carnival rides or whatever, just about crushes another guy, and Rick's able to, you know, kind of get it out of the way, and Cammy's like, oh my god, he saved the day. And he's like, ah, oh, trick of the light, you know.
Yeah, he didn't really catch that crane falling down. Yeah.
And she's almost starting to go down the I'll prove who it is sort of route. But before she gets too far down that, Team Carnivore attacks the carnival.
Yeah.
Team Carnivore, you know they're going to be bad people.
You just know. They have to be.
That's not a superhero team name. You know what I mean?
And those are the cat people, which I was like, I wondered if they were the same types of people we saw earlier in the previous issue where they were like cat-like.
One of them maybe, but I don't think there's a strong connection because one of them looks like a bear.
That's true.
Another
one's a snake.
A snake. Another has wings.
Yeah. That's true.
I think this is the Beast People Unite group.
Yeah.
But unsurprisingly, Roustabout shows up, starts to have a little problem with this group, but the locals come in and help out, and that's enough for him to catch his breath and take care of them and stuff.
I really loved that the locals are willing to go to bat for their hero. You know, because you see that sometimes in, like, even movies, you know, and stuff like that. Hey, our guy's getting the worst of it. They pick up some shovels and some crowbars and, hey, get off of them.
Yeah.
I really like that type of stuff where the people kind of rise up to the occasion.
Mm-hmm. And it played well.
It really did.
And Cammy is like, okay, I think I know who this is. All the pieces are fitting together. But before she sends off the email, she winds up seeing Roustabout and her older cousin Lynn kissing and stuff. It's like, clearly they know each other.
Yeah.
At which point Cammy realizes, okay, it's a small town. Everybody knows everybody. That means they probably know everybody's secrets, too, and they're keeping them.
Yeah.
So she's not about to be the one to go spill the beans on this or whatever. So she was a much more likable character here than Irene was in the previous issue.
Exactly. She didn't throw the hand grenade that could ruin lives. She just kind of let things lie where they were and actually showed respect for the small town, which I liked.
Yeah. Yeah. It was starting to grow on her.
Yeah. And this was nice because it was Smallville in all the right ways. It was, and I do think it's good for kids who grow up in the city to get out in the country every now and vice versa, you know, yes. Get out of your element. And so this was nice. You could see parents really doing stuff like this. And I think she probably had a good enough time where she wouldn't mind going back next summer.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see this followed up on at some point.
Yeah, me too. Because it was kind of a cool thing. And I wouldn't mind reading more about this town because it seems almost flashback in time to Smallville, to Mayberry, to the 1950s. And I'm not even, you know, nostalgic for that stuff, but it's like that better place that's not dark and dreary and brings you down.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can have some superheroing and also have a good society.
I just question the wisdom of having this story follow up the last one.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. It went from that total, almost like a hatred of the characters in the story to I like this girl. And it was so jarring going from one story to the next.
Well, for me, it was more both of these are very clearly riffs on Superman.
That's true. Yep.
You know, and depending how you frame it, I mean, Lois is the go-to example for the previous issue, but Lana was just as bad towards teen Clark.
Yep.
And Lynn here is essentially the good version of young Lana.
Yeah, she's good Lana.
So, I like this much better. I just think they might have been better off spacing those two stories apart just a little bit.
Yeah. it was kind of weird that they did put him back to back, but I mean, it does fit with the Superman stories that he was telling at that time. Who knows? I'm sure he had his reasons.
It's also an echo, though, of the first issue of this miniseries of the newcomers, because instead of people coming to Astro City, we've got somebody leaving and going through the same sort of growth cycle.
Very true. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but very true.
So I'm curious if we'll see similar parallels in the final two issues of this miniseries or not.
It was funny because reading this, I liked issue 22.
Mm-hmm.
I liked issue 1. I did like the 9/11, even though it was short. It was quick. I liked issue 3. I liked the issue 2 of Local Heroes, but we went on this for a while. I've never read anything in Astro City where I came out feeling like I really hate this person. And that's the feeling you have because... But there's people like that that you're not going to naturally like, so it made it feel a little bit more real at the same time.
Yeah, I think they could have told that same story, but done a twist on the character to make her, frankly, more like a Lucille Ball kind of classic character, where Lucy gets into the annex, Lucy drives people nuts, but she's likable and she's lovable in the end kind of a deal.
Exactly. Almost like a redeeming quality, where here it felt like there was no redemption in that story for her.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the way they ended it, with the daughter is I'm pining over this other dude, not your father. I was just like, oh, I really don't like this woman. I don't like her at all.
Yeah, yeah. And it didn't really make me like Flying Fox. Not that I dislike that character, but again, it's like, why was she even there?
Yeah, it's just weird. What's weird is I guess that's the way he meant it to be. We both felt the same thing.
Imagine if they had taken that Shining Armor story with Irene. Instead of having the daughter... She has just moved into a retirement home. Her husband has died. She's got nobody. And then the person helping her move in or the one of the caretakers there, that's who she's telling the story to.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Because having scared this one guy off, she's now alone and whatnot. That could have made us like the character a bit more.
Because there's repercussions to what happened to her, and you almost feel bad for her at that point versus I came out of it feeling like, oh, I don't like this person. That would have been it. Man, you need to talk to people before they finish writing their stories, John.
Particularly ones they did like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Hey, call me up. Let's do a rewrite on this. This didn't work, man. You were meant to be an editor, I swear.
What would have been an interesting twist to do on that, if it had been a young college age guy who'd helped her move in or whatever from the moving company or whatever, and at the end of the story, he's walking out, and you get kind of the old school Superman wink of he is Atomicus.
Oh, that would have been really cool.
It would have been tough to pull off right, but if you could, it'd been really cool, yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Atomicus, I did like him, and I see why he reacted the way he did, and that's where I feel so weird with those characters like Shazam and Atomicus, you know. With Shazam, he's like forever a young character in the comics. And it gets to that creepy point where you can't ever have any romantic stuff or anything like this because it's a little boy. Then it takes on different connotations and it's like, it feels gross. So sometimes I want them to age him up a bit.
There's a ton of things you could do with that kind of a character, though. If you've got, again, going with the Shazam thing, if they're a young kid and they morph into an adult hero, you've got the hothead kid. He's turning into the hero every time something sets him off or whatever. The hero takes his place and he's like, oh, false alarm again. Okay. Give the kid a little time to cool down or whatever, goes back. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it would explain why the Shazam type would be, you know, flying over the city with nothing to do because he's got nothing to do. The kid called him just because he was a hothead.
Exactly. Yeah. I wonder if they ever will age him up. I'm just curious. Or, you know, they did it with John.
The thing is, if you age up Billy Batson, it kind of ruins the character and the concept.
Yeah, then you have another Superman.
Yeah.
Essentially, you literally have another Superman who just loses his powers when he's in disguise.
And, I mean, they've taken it to the other extreme where you've got the old person who, you know, essentially Shazams into a younger hero at that
point. Yeah, exactly.
Matter of fact, I think Eric Larson did that at one point with one of the characters in the Savage Dragon universe.
I probably wasn't reading it at that time, but that's funny. But I tell you what, I did have fun with this, so it was another good read. But that number two, so Local Heroes number two, if anyone's reading along with us, go into it with a little trepidation because it's like, you won't like that person.
Or tell us what you think, if it worked better for you than it did for us.
Yeah, let us know and let us know why.
Yeah, yeah. So we got two more issues of this and then that finishes out this miniseries. We're going to cover the Astro City Aerosmith, the Astro City part of that flip book, and then the Astro City Special and Supersonic. And that will be in the next episode. The one after that, I think we'll just do the Visitor Guide and just kind of a, what are we thinking of the series overall? But then that'll finish off the second Metro book for us.
Yeah.
And then we'll start diving into the Dark Age stuff.
Yes, which I'm interested to see because I have never read it. So I'm interested to see it. I think I picked up a volume 3 is where I started Astro City.
I haven't read Dark Ages since it came out.
I haven't heard good things.
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't my favorite because it just kept going.
It's long form, which is different.
Yeah. So I'm curious if I like it better or worse on a reread. But what we're going to do, because there were some one-shots in between those volumes, is we're going to do an episode per book of the Dark Age, because they were all four-issue miniseries, and then we'll circle back and do the intervening one-shots and two-parters or whatnot.
All right, cool. That works for me.
Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.